See, if I wanted to waste 3 hours, I would have watched fucking Interstellar.
Wouldn't be a podcast if we didn't shit on Interstellar. At least once.
And remember, I went into this with my head held high. I was very pro-Hobbit. For the last 2 years, I've been yay Hobbit, yay Peter Jackson. You just wait and see. It's going to be amazing. I was just punching my own dick for about 2 hours and 30 minutes.
Well, you were going to do that anyway, but only for about 2 hours
It
otherwise.
Was angry, though. It wasn't a happy punch.
Oh, okay.
It was an angry punch.
Yeah, he was letting other people in other rows punch it, and that's how bad it was.
Well, I'm picturing like a speed bag.
There you go. I just put my junk in the middle of a Rock'em Sock'em Robots ring.
In the middle of a Hungry Hungry Hippos.
There you go.
Hey now.
That was hot. And I was trying to put the little white balls in my urethra.
Ooh, shoot them out?
Yeah, there you go. It was
taking
fun.
Edging to the whole new level.
Looked like a hamster mouth.
Yeah. It was like a squirrel with his mouth full of nuts.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, geeks of all ages, welcome to a fun and festive episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'm Justin Cavender, and with me, as always, is David and Randy. How the hell are you two doing today?
Perfect.
Lovely, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm fabulous. I love lovely. I say lovely all the time now. It's just so quaint and polite.
Yeah, you don't hear too often, really.
A lot of British folks say lovely.
The old in out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how. You know what was not lovely was freaking The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies. We've all seen it. In fact, Randy was a guest on the Maniacs on Movies podcast last week to talk about it.
I was.
He and the host of that show, Mr. Von Garakani, actually chatted about the show quite a bit. And during that podcast, David was fuming. You could have fried an egg on his head. He was so mad. And Dave, I just want to give you an opportunity to vent, let off some steam, and tell us your thoughts on The Hobbit Battle of the Five Armies.
Well, first of all, two things. One, I was happy as a pig in shit because I knew I was going to get to have a lively debate on the podcast. It was pretty good. Now, this is going to be your spoiler warning because I don't know if we're going to be able to truly talk about this without spoiling the movie based off the book that's, you know, 70-something years old and it's already had two animated features. So if you haven't read the book or seen the movie and you're concerned about being spoiled 5 days later, it's tough shit. We're going to spoil this shit.
Apparently, not a lot of people have seen the movie because I guess it only raked in 89 million over the last 5 days. I say only, like that's not a lot. In the grand scheme of things, it's probably quite a bit of money. But as far as Lord of the Rings goes, it's not terribly impressive.
Well, think about it. $89 million in 5 days, and we were saying that The Hunger Games was considered a non-success at $123 million over 3 days. So we could put it in comparison there. Cost less to make and was a far superior movie.
No.
That's right. I said it.
With the bow and arrows and the shooting down the planes?
As opposed to this one with the bow and arrows and shooting down the dragons?
That's all it takes. Using a boy as the bow?
Yeah, it looked like they were shooting it. He was shooting it off a suspender on the boy's bag. It was that scene was pretty ridiculous.
It was very Three Stooges. Like, now I'm making sure I have my physics correct. Like, bows shoot arrows because, like, the flexibility of the wood, right? It's not an elastic string. Am I correct on that?
It's the wood that's the elastic part.
This string was made by elves 1,000 years ago.
For giant iron spikes.
Yes. The kid didn't know what it was. He made a suspender out of it, held up his pantaloons, and it worked fine.
It was elven-made super elastic mithril string.
Yes.
And I really can't complain too much because arguably the end of Smaug is the best part of this movie.
Which is funny because it should have been the end of the last movie.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It was like 8 minutes at the most, and then there was like the title card.
Yes.
That was pretty lame. That totally should have been the end. And that would have been your resolution that you complained about so much, Dave. Anyway, let me have you You are allowed to have the floor again. I'm sorry we interrupted.
Perfect. That's not a problem. That was one of my first things I want to talk about was this should have been at the end of Desolation of Smaug. This had no purpose in this movie other than to bloat this movie because without this one was already the shortest of the Hobbit movies. Take out this and it's a very small movie and you could argue that it does not have the normal three-act structure of a film. So Jackson had to sacrifice Desolation of Smaug, give that movie zero climax. There was no climax in Smaug and put it in this movie and although it was amazing and it was the best action piece of the film, it the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, I should have seen this last year. And even though I enjoyed it, it seemed out of place.
Yes,
you know, absolutely. It definitely should have ended and that you could have started this movie with the people of Lake Town like going towards Dale, going towards Erebor, and then having them realize, oh, the bard did it, I saw the bard do it. And that's how you should have started this movie. I think there's a great quote in the movie where Dalen talks to Thorin and he says, you are lesser now than you have ever been. And I think I think he was talking to Peter Jackson. As a filmmaker, I think Peter Jackson is a third the filmmaker he was when he made the Lord of the Rings movies. Wow. And I don't know if it's because it's money. I don't know if now that he has money to throw at things, it lacks heart. But this movie was emotionally hollow for me.
That's funny that you say that because there's even like a line in the movie where he says, be careful of the gold sickness. Like,
the dragon sickness, they called it, yeah.
I thought they said gold sickness.
Well, they mostly referred to it as dragon sickness. I think one time they may have referred to it as gold sickness, but yeah. That was one of the things that bothered me was calling it dragon sickness because it sounded like a cop-out to me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and to be fair, that is a carryover from in the novel, there is dragon sickness.
Uh-huh.
But in the novel, you have to realize that you know, that happens at around, like, page 200. So from, like, page 200 to, like, 250, he's got dragon sickness, and it's a small part of the book. But by segmenting these movies in the way they did, it became, you know, 80% of a whole film. It became almost 2 hours of screen time was this dragon sickness that, in reality, was this footnote just to give depth to Thorin, because Thorin is a dick in the novels, and he's a total asshole, but his dragon sickness going over the edge is only for about 50 pages. And for it to be such a large part of this movie made Thorin wholly unlikable. His redemption came way too late. All I can think about is he's deep within Erebor in that little lake of gold where he
throws his crown.
Oh my God. It looked awful. And so all I can think about is like, as he's having this introspective moment, like, hundreds of dwarves are being massacred. Humans, like while he's having his little Oprah moment, all of these people are dying. And then he has to like go all up all those stairs. You know, I'm overthinking the logistics of this, but he's got to go all the way up to the dwarves. Then he has to have his heart to heart with the dwarves the whole time. Like the battle is turning against them, and it made his redemption very convenient and. I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it. And
12 dwarves coming down the mountain is going to make the difference. You know, yeah, like you know, there's hundreds and thousands of orcs.
They were the flying V. They were in the Mighty Ducks formation when they came out. Of course, they were going to win. They were going to change the tide of battle.
All I could think about when he threw his crown, all I could think about was Chuck Henry when his van blew up during that fire. And he was like, stupid truck. All I could think of was stupid crown. Oh my God, that was terrible.
And they completely ignored almost all of the dwarves. If you were not in Thorin's bloodline, you didn't get like any screen time. Like Bombor got like to blow the horn, mm-hmm. and Dwaylin or whatever got to like tell Thorin he was a bitch. But other than that, no one got screen time. I mean, even you could argue that Philly didn't get any screen time until he got killed.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry, Randy, you were gonna say something. I think I cut you off.
I was just going to actually agree with David to the point where I didn't feel that Thorin was redeemable either. I thought he was a C word all the way through. And I generally haven't liked his character through all three movies, but I strongly disliked him in this last one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I still wanted him to win at the end in the battle against Azog. But we'll get to that when the debate naturally progresses to that point.
Oh, and it will. Now, yeah. I want to point out one thing about the podcast that Randy was on. It's Maniacs on Movies, and it's a great podcast. You should definitely listen to it. But one of the things that you guys were harping on a lot was this, oh, it's going to be so bad. I hear that this is going to be in the extended edition. And then like 5 minutes later, oh, there's an interview with so-and-so. It's going to be in the special edition. Like you guys mentioned like 11 things that sounded awesome that are going to be, that aren't in the movie. Like this was the shortest of the Hobbit movies. There was room to insert things.
Absolutely. But you know, the reason why it wasn't though, is to get people to buy it when it comes out later. Right. I 100% believe that's the reason why we didn't get a longer bit with more of those fun bits and pieces that you're talking about in there.
Right, and so that comes to my point of, fuck you, Peter Jackson. I mean, he made these three movies so he could make a shit ton of money off the Hobbit movies, and then purposely left stuff on the cutting room floor, knowing that were trained because the Lord of the Rings special editions, which were already long movies, which needed extended editions, which were amazing. Now we're supposed to get these ones. I will never watch another Hobbit movie. I will not watch them on HBO. I will not watch them. I will not get the extended editions. I am through with the Hobbit with Peter Jackson. I was so disgusted with this trilogy.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Real quick. When we last saw Gandalf, he was in a cage, left to rot, and it was looking pretty bad. What did you guys think of seeing Saruman and freaking Elrond kick ass? That was pretty cool, right? You guys like that?
Oh yeah.
And then even Galadriel like going all crazy, wicked bad elf for a second.
Going all like black elf.
Like when she when she had the that temptation to get the ring with Frodo. Remember how she turned all crazy color?
Right.
She was talking like Mordish. And...
Yeah, she packed her evil eyes or her angry eyes and. And she casted him aside pretty easily. I dug that. I thought that was pretty neat.
And I really like the symbolism of like the humans. They have the nine human rings, mm-hmm. and Gandalf, Elrond, and Galadriel. They have the three elven rings. Mm-hmm. And so it was nice that we had like 12, the 12 of the rings, like fighting it out.
Right. Just the dwarf rings are the only ones that were left out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And something about seeing Elrond just in his armor. Just slicing fools is just badass. I got a little chilly when that was happening. I dug that scene.
I was digging seeing Saruman being all spry, taking him out too.
Yeah.
You know that's not Christopher Lee doing all that, but it's still pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that Smaug and the Necromancer stuff were my favorite parts of the film, and they were both over within like the first 35 minutes of the film and never touched on again. Well, obviously Smaug was dead, so you couldn't do much. But I would have liked to have seen... Because the whole thing was sold to us. You know, we were going to get all these movies. It was originally going to be two movies. First movie adaptation of the Hobbit novel. Second movie, wholly original content that was going to bridge the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Right.
That's a great concept. I'm all on board for that. Then it turned into three movies, and they were going to intercut all of the connective tissues. But at the time, There and Back Again, which became the Battle of the Five Armies, was going to be a large portion of it was going to be that connective tissue between the two trilogies. And I don't think that we got that. I think we got
a couple scenes connecting the trilogies.
Right. And speaking of which, that whole part where Legolas, where his father told him to go seek out a ranger, how forced did that feel?
Yeah.
I won't give you his name, but it's Strider.
Yeah.
Can't tell you his name, but he goes by Strider.
Oh my God. I think I did the biggest eye roll. My whole body shook when I did my eye roll for that scene. I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Or when he's talking to Tariel, Evangeline Lilly's character, and he's like, it hurts because it was real. Like, yeah, Lee right. Pace.
And then it cuts to freaking Bilbo looking, or he's just staring off in the distance like, what the fuck? And I'm like, is he overhearing this? How absurd this conversation was? And then, yeah, they weren't really connected. But at the he had a look on his face that I think everyone in the theater had. Like, what the fuck are they talking about? This is stupid.
Yeah, I mean, Lee Pace is an amazing actor. But, I mean, he's kind of been subpar in his last two roles. You know, he was Ronan the Accuser in Guardians of the Galaxy, and now he's – I forget his name in this movie because he's completely forgettable. I did enjoy when his moose, like, gored, like, four or five people, and then he, like, decapitated him with his sword.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But yeah,
I totally – like, no joke. Before that had – like, 2 seconds before the moose picked up – I call it a stag. I guess it's a moose, but
– you could just easily be a stag.
Okay, yeah. So –
Well, I think the antlers were more moose-like. They were scoops instead of horns.
And Thranduil, is that his name?
Yeah, that's his name.
when just before that happened, I whispered to Lynn, I was like, God, I hope nothing happens to his stag. And then he scoops up the dude, chops off the head, and gets shot in the chest twice and then once in the face.
Yeah.
That was hardcore.
No, shoot the elf.
Yeah.
Leave the stag alone. Shoot the elf.
Exactly. Holy smokes.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the defending... CGI. Yes, that's exactly where I'm going. The defending dwarf army. Okay, so...
Dane's little tick mount was amazing.
Yeah, the mount was amazing.
All armored
what was up.
Up
with the bad video game CGI face on that guy?
Yeah, that looked... It
couldn't
looked
stand it. It looked... I mean, don't get me wrong. It looked pretty good for a video game, but it didn't look like it should have been...
In a $300 million movie.
Exactly. Yeah, so let's talk about the five armies.
Count them. You got humans.
Humans.
You got dwarves.
Dwarves.
You got elves.
Uh-huh.
You got orcs.
Got orcs.
Then beasts. Then what do you got?
Beasts.
Beasts.
Yeah,
beasts.
I guess you could call it beasts because we've got those worm thingies. And then I think, according to the book, isn't the fifth one supposed to be the eagles?
Yeah, the eagles and the beasts.
Eagles, you got bats, you got dune sandworms.
So, like, the battle of, what, six, seven armies now? You know, I'm not going to say that I loved it, because I didn't. It's the only of the three Hobbit movies that I did not fall asleep during. And that could be... Well, it's mediocre praise, but that could be due to two factors. One, it wasn't a midnight screening. It was 10:15, so it wasn't as late. So that is in its benefit, too.
But 2 hours.
The fact that it was only 2 hours and 24 minutes instead of closer to 3 hours like the other ones have been.
Yeah.
So
talking of Dane, you know, Billy Connolly, like, I just thought his character was just out of place, and it was like a Saturday Night Live sketch. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that. At that point, I felt like I was watching like a parody of The Lord of the Rings, like his whole interaction. It was like an absurd Gimli, and it really took me out of the film. And I understand they cast Billy Connolly for a reason, and I don't know, maybe it was a combination of the terrible CGI and stuff, but it really bothered me. Like, you know, there was that whole thing. It's like, come on, we're getting massacred. Where's everybody at? I need some help. I know I just turned him like Latino there, but it was like, it just struck me as bad from start to finish. And like, Peter Jackson just didn't care.
I think one of the reasons why it was as bad as it was is it was CGI on CGI. And we've talked about this before, and I'm kind of a critic when it comes to the look of The Lord of the Rings versus The Hobbit, because of the fact that in Lord of the Rings, the orcs were dudes in suits. The dwarves were dudes in suits. And I mean, here it's all CG, so you can have him swinging his big old freaking Thor's hammer and be knocking dozens of orcs off to the side, because it's all CG and there's no real weight to anything. So that makes it incredibly cheesy and it just overall not believable. Whereas when you're shooting those same kind of battle scenes in a practical way, when you've got people in suits, it's going to be a little bit more dynamic. It's going to be a little bit more interesting. It's not going to be as fantasy / video gamey, because of the fact that you're not going to be able to just bowl 12 people over with one swing, that kind of thing. I think that's one of the biggest differences. Now, I know in Lord of the Rings, a lot of when you see really, really large battles, of course, I know the background, they're going to be CG. And I know a lot of them are going to be CG. But in this one, I don't even know if there was a single orc in a costume.
Right. I mean, that's the problem, is that Jackson went on record because he didn't want to compare the battles to the battles of Helm's Deep and Planter Fields, because he didn't think he could top it. And, you know, he may be right there. So he went and said that the Battle of the Five Armies is going to be special because it's going to be a personal battle. It's going to have a lot of inter-character play, and you're really going to feel an emotional toll. And I think that none of that is true. Like, I don't care, with the exception of Bilbo, Kili, which we know that doesn't end well for him, and Bard, I wish the rest of them all had their fucking throat slit. I was so bored with them. But so the Lord of the Rings movies, yeah, I think practical over CGI is always going to win out as far as like an emotional toll. Because even though like in Helm's Deep there was these vast computer-generated orc armies, every time we went up close to see like Aragorn and Gimli like fighting on the bridge, you know, they're fighting, the people they're fighting are real people. Mm-hmm. And they move like real people, and they fight like real people, and they reflect light like real people, and they look real.
And they got, they actually got, you know, fencing training and sword fighting training. they went through, like, this grueling boot camp to become, you know, these crazy wicked warriors
on camera. And then on here, when we see Thorin and Feely and Keely and all the other dwarves fighting hordes of orcs, they're all CGI, so you get that terrible, like, weightlessness when they get hit. You know, they look bad. I did see it in high frame rate, and the high frame rate was very inconsistent. Like, it went from times of just pure spectacular majesty, this is amazing, like, this is going to be great, to scenes where it really looked poorly. And I think it may have something to do with first unit versus second unit, because a lot of the stuff I had complaints on were, like, shots of, like, the people from Dale, like, leaving, like, just random extras, no main characters. And so I don't know if maybe Andy Serkis, who directed the second unit, just wasn't as familiar with the technology, or if they were just, obviously they weren't as concerned because it is second unit. But it really, really stood out when it wasn't a principal cast in the action, and I it bugged me. It could also be, you know, those are shots that don't have a lot of effects, so maybe those ones didn't get put through the same, you know, color correction process. But that's a technical issue, but, you know, it's still an issue.
You know what bothered me the most was where the Arkenstone ended up. Like, it just becomes a non-issue at the end of the movie.
Where does it end up?
Well, Bard has it in his pocket prior to the battle, but that's the last we see of it. It just disappears.
I totally didn't think of that. I can call Justin.
We're like, so we've been hearing about this stone for about 8 hours now. What happened to it?
I think that means Bard is now the king under the mountain.
Yeah.
He's like, God, he's like, I totally snuck away with this thing.
So all this shit's mine now.
Yeah, basically.
Give your dwarf its shit and leave.
Take these statues with you, too.
Exactly.
Or add a couple, you know, a couple dozen feet to them, make them taller.
That's so funny, Justin.
Yeah.
This is the most important thing in the universe. What happened to it? I don't know.
Yeah.
And the little negotiating peephole thing was kind of weird.
Yeah.
I didn't really care for that either. That was bizarre. There was a lot of shit that was just off about that. And then what about the idea of, at the end of the movie, fast forward, and we get to Bilbo coming home. Everyone's, you know, they're hawking his shit, and he gets his stuff back, and Gandalf leaves him there in his house. He left him at the Shire, right? At the border of the Shire.
Yeah.
And then they make it play off like they hadn't seen each other since then. They probably have, because we all know that conversation goes to, you know, you haven't aged a day, yet now he's this old fucking man. So he would have had to have seen him again. It was just weird how they shot that. I appreciated that it went into where the Fellowship of the Ring begins. It's just knowing how that conversation plays out, it's weird that he would say you haven't aged a day.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Look at you, Justin. That's why you're on the show, man. Darkenstone, and now...
Well,
so what they should have done to plug that particular hole is never have Ian Holm have come back to begin with, and just maybe age Martin Freeman a little bit.
Well, I think that Gandalf has been around before, because, you know, all the kids were excited when he came into town in Fellowship, and, you know, they know that he has fireworks. He knows, you know, Merry and Pip, and he knows Frodo, for crying out loud. It's just weird that they chose to have that conversation. You haven't aged a day.
Well, it does add a nice little bow to it, and it gives it a nice definitive ending, unlike the Return of the King multiple endings.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
And that's one thing this movie doesn't have, is dozens of endings.
Yes, that's true.
Or the emotional complexities, or good storytelling, or overall cinematicness, you know?
Well, I wasn't going for the twisting the knife effect, but yeah.
Yeah, I just was so mad. I was so upset when I left the theater, like, because, you know, we had talked on the podcast numerous times that, you know, I was going to have to eat crow, because obviously the third one was going to be amazing, because we all knew that was going to be the Battle of the Five Armies, even before it was called the Battle of the Five Armies. And we knew that it was going to have all of the great parts, and it was going to be amazing. And so I was ready to come on the podcast today and be like, you know what, guys, this movie made the other two worth it. You know, this movie was so good that, like, I forgive Peter Jackson for the first two. And from start to finish, I didn't get any of that.
Mm-hmm. It was terrible.
Okay, you guys were more familiar with the story than I was going into it, but let me tell you, I've never read the book. I've seen the animated movie once, and it was so long ago, I don't even remember it.
This is an animated movie, too. You saw this animated movie.
Okay, you're 100% accurate in that assessment. But I will say that Thorin's death at the end surprised me. I wasn't expecting Keeley to die, and of course, the whole manufactured love story with him and Tauriel, I know, is entirely... made for this movie and doesn't really exist in the lore outside of it. But, you know, that particular scene, I felt a little something. You know, it was a little emotional seeing all those dwarves get killed. But it wasn't enough to redeem the whole story overall. So I'll agree with you on that point as well. I don't think it was 100% devoid of emotion. I think they tried, but I think it was too little too late.
Yeah, and Vaughn, when you guys are on the podcast, the Maniacs on Movies, to plug one more time, he actually made a point that I didn't really catch. I don't know if it's in the Hobbit book, and I just skipped over it, is that Thorin, Keeley, and Feely were all from the same bloodline, and so they all had to die so that Thorin's bloodline ended, so that the dwarves could elect a new king and stuff like that. And for whatever reason, I never put two and two together that they were the three people that were from the same bloodline.
Yeah.
And that now that all three of them are dead, like, that bloodline has ended.
The line has ended!
You see John Noble just jump off the top of a skillet or some shit.
So, a couple of things. I think Martin Freeman was an amazing Bilbo Baggins. I loved him to death. I got choked up every time he was homesick, and every time he reached out to do the right thing, I thought he was amazing.
I 100% agree with you on that one.
Biggest takeaway from the whole trilogy. It was a pleasure seeing Bilbo on screen and be a hero.
I really liked Luke Evans as well as the Bard.
Yeah.
Those two, and I was sad that, you know, Bilbo wasn't really the focus of the trilogy. It was more Thorin, you know, in this trilogy. And I think had Bilbo been the emotional center that I always thought he was, I think I may have had a different opinion on the franchise. Like, Martin Freeman, like you said, was great in all three movies.
Yar. Anytime his little Shire music kicked on, I was like, oh! I love these hobbits.
and the book is completely told from Bilbo's point of view, right? Like, when
Correct.
He gets knocked out, you don't see what happens in the battle.
Yeah. It's...
Next thing you see is him waking up.
Yeah.
Right?
The end.
It's very Hunger Games-esque.
I was like, what? I actually watched the animated Hobbit, because I actually have that on DVD, the animated Hobbit. I picked it up when Fellowship came out, when the whole world was fucking Hobbit crazy.
Right.
I had seen it so long ago when I was a kid, that when I saw it at Best Buy, I was like, holy shit, and I picked it up.
Now, that animated movie that tells the entire story of The Hobbit, what's that clocking at? What's the time on that?
Oh, it's pretty short, dude. I don't even know if it might be like 68 minutes. Hold on. Let me grab it. 78 minutes. I was close. And that's with singing. It has singing.
Oh. Huh. What were your other takeaways you were talking about? You had a couple.
Oh, okay. That I still hate dwarves.
Yeah.
Hate them in everything that they're in. Not a fan of dwarves. I love watching Legolas kill shit. It's fun. Like, Jason Statham is, for me, in action movies, I can watch Legolas just shoot arrows all day long.
He's the Statham of Middle-earth.
He is. He really, really is. And when he did not have an arrow in his little quiver, I got so sad. I love Legolas. I love watching him kill shit. It's just amazing. And Gandalf, man, I can't ever picture anybody else ever being Gandalf.
No.
In a million years. It's just amazing. Ian McKellen just kills it. And it makes me sad that he's not as powerful yet. You know, just Gandalf the Grey is, you know, a great wizard, but he's also, you know, a delicate flower in a lot of ways. You know,
yeah.
He's very fragile.
And the elves don't trust him yet.
Yeah, that's true. They don't. He's just a crackpot old wizard.
should be, oh yeah, well, me and two of your kind just kick the crap out of the nine Nazgul and what will become Sauron.
And that's another thing. Elves are some pretentious fucks. Right?
Yes, they are.
They have a real problem with everybody that's not elven kind.
And it's funny, talking about elves and dwarfs, like, at the beginning when Tariel and Keely are having the little thing, I'm like, why is Legolas so against her getting in with that hobbit? And I'm like, oh, yeah, he's a dwarf. He doesn't look like it. I totally forgot for, like, 2 minutes he was a dwarf.
Yeah.
It was not my shining moment.
He's big for a dwarf. He's tall for a dwarf.
Yeah. But not so stout.
Yeah. The original Lord of the Rings trilogy, it's called that, is just so near and dear to my heart in that unless it's like Star Wars, I really don't see how anything can really beat it. You know what I mean? It's just it hit me at the right time in my life. You know, I was in college and I loved movies. I still love movies, but the way, like you guys said, the way they were filmed, it just has this organic vibe to it that, and it was such an accomplishment that I just don't think it could ever be topped. It's just one of those movies, that trilogy is just always going to be so close to my heart that nothing could ever beat it. And that's a shame, and it's unfair for everything else, but that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those original three are pretty amazing. And I mean, they are, you know, I mean, I know Return of the King gets a lot of flack for having so many endings, but like, it's an amazing piece of cinema, is Return of the King. And, you know, when it's 13 Academy Awards, so it must be pretty good.
Yeah. Those Academy guys know everything.
Everything. That's why.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why Marissa Tomei has an Oscar and, you know, insert amazing actor here does not.
Well, did she get it from My Cousin Vinny?
Yes.
Okay. She's pretty fucking funny in that movie.
I agree. She's very funny in that movie. But is that, would you say that's an Academy picture?
I don't know. She impressed me. I liked every scene that she was in, Dave. She's a beautiful woman.
She is. She still is. Like, you know,
I said 20... she is a beautiful woman.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like 20 years, you know, My Cousin Vinny's over 20 years ago, and she still looks pretty good. Yeah. Some would say even better now than she did then.
I think she's very attractive.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's put a neat little bow on The Hobbit here. Randy, okay, so Chris reviewed it for the site, and he was over the moon on it. He actually gave it an A, which I gave him just mountains of grief when I saw him over the weekend. What would you grade it, Randy, since you're the one who probably liked the most of us three?
I'm going to give it a B-. I mean, it's above average, but it wasn't great. I enjoyed it. It kept my interest, and I thought overall it wrapped up enough of the story so that it doesn't have to bother me.
Give me one.
Guys mentioned the Arkenstone, I didn't even think about that whole thing not getting wrapped up before, and now I'm kind of pissed about it. But I feel like everything else I can just put to rest and not have to worry about seeing it again until the extended edition comes out.
Give me one. Well, give me your favorite takeaway from this Hobbit movie.
Apparently the physics of firing a gigantic black iron arrow requires merely the elastic of a young boy's suspenders.
Mm-hmm. So, all right.
There you go.
What grade would you give it, Justin?
Oh, a D+. And I'm only giving it the plus because I love Bilbo Baggins.
Nice. Give me a positive takeaway from it, since we shit on it a lot.
I gave you a bunch.
That's right, yeah.
Bilbo was my takeaway. Gandalf was amazing. And I'd love to see an Elrond in armor again. That guy just fucking... I could watch him slay shit all day, just like Legolas. Like, something about... He has his presence, right? When you see Elrond show up, then you know it's about to get real, right? Yeah. And I loved it. And even though those wraiths were unstoppable, they didn't give a shit. They just kept going and going and going. They were relentless, and I loved it.
Awesome. Well, cool.
There you go. Oh, and Lynn saying, I'm going to ram them when the dwarves are on the ramps going up the mountain. Holy shit. I laughed like an asshole in the theater, and everyone probably looked at me. That's another thing, okay? During the original Lord of the Rings trilogy, everyone clapped when the movies were over. And I'm not a clapper at the end of movies. I don't like doing it. I hate it when I hear it. But I don't remember a single clap in any of the three films that I watched.
No, not a one.
That's interesting.
I saw a lot of sad sighs.
What about you? What do you give it, Dave?
Oh, I give it a straight D.
Straight D. I had a straight plus. D. I had a ray of hope.
You had a plus. I gave it a straight D.
That's for school for me.
And my takeaways are pretty much exactly Justin's, but I'll add that Billy Boyd's the Last Goodbye, his song at the end over like the concept art for all the characters, it was kind of a nice touch. I would have liked it if they'd maybe incorporated a little more, like it's like a all encompassing Hobbit trilogy type thing. But I thought it was well done. Gave me the goosebumps.
There you go. So if you want to hear more about this movie, remember to check out last week's episode of the Maniacs on Movies podcast.
Or if you just want to hear a positive spin, right? Yeah. If you don't want to hear,
we were much more positive about it than you guys are. I'm not even fighting hard because I'll agree with a lot of the negatives that you guys brought up. But you know, it's completely different because you guys, and I'm not, and this isn't a slam against you, but you have a much more negative overall reaction to the movie, whereas when I was talking to Vaughn about it, he was absolutely glowing. So it's like his positivity is contagious, you know? So it's like you're talking to somebody that's excited about something, you get a little bit excited too. Talking to you guys and you're just like beating it with a baseball bat, and I'm just like, yeah, that guy needs to be beat with a baseball bat.
I'm hearing you wishy-washy like here, Randy.
No.
You flip-flopping? Are you John Kerry in this?
If you were to listen to this podcast and you listen to that one, you will not hear me differing on my opinions on anything.
No, it's fine.
Let's move on. Do we have a fun list?
We do. You know, this particular time of year, we haven't really mentioned it much, but it is the holidays or Wookiee Life Day, if you're a fan of the Star Wars Christmas special.
I am.
Which we all should be. Come on, it was the animated introduction of Boba Fett. It doesn't get much cooler than that. Forget about the B. Arthur part, but you know.
That's my favorite
I figured I would go somewhere a little bit fun and holiday-oriented for our list today. And this is a movie that I'm pretty sure at some point in time we've all quoted and loved very dearly, some of us. So here's some fun, interesting facts about Home Alone that you probably didn't already know.
Nice.
Now, did you know the role of Kevin was specifically written for Macaulay Culkin?
I did not.
I did.
But they auditioned. They auditioned
Uncle,
100
because
other.
Because he was on Uncle Buck.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. They auditioned 100 other kids though, just to be safe. Now that takes me to the next one on the list. Bringing up Uncle Buck, the idea for Home Alone was born on the set of that very movie. It occurred to John Hughes while making Uncle Buck, which also starred Macaulay Culkin.
Interesting.
Now here's a fun one. You know, the inept burglars, Harry and Marv, they would have died in real life from all the injuries that those characters sustained in the movie.
Really?
Yeah, so an actual doctor watched it and diagnosed all the injuries sustained during the course of the film. There would have been serious lifelong handicaps, if not death, for both of them.
Well, okay, so Joe Pesci gets shot in the nuts with the BB gun. Then he gets his hand burned. Then he gets his head burned.
Yeah, the blowtorch to the head. Specifically that one's called out as would need not only like skin grafts, but will also more than likely burn the bone. It would like burn all the way down to the bone.
Right. Then he gets
whacked in the face with a paint can.
Well, then he gets the feathers in the face. Well, there's like the cellophane on his face, and then the feathers, and then he slips on micro machines. Then he gets a paint can to the face. Then he gets a crowbar to the sternum because of the tarantula. And then he falls down the rope and smashes into the building. Those are his injuries.
Yeah, I think it's more Marv, like in the basement. I think he dies a couple.
Well, the iron hits him in the face. Yeah, he slips and falls on the ice. Oh, I guess Joe Pesci slips on the ice too. Remember when he's going up the steps because he wetted him.
Yeah.
But then Marv, he slips on ice, gets an iron to the face, gets a nail in the foot.
Oh, all the broken glass, too, when he steps on all
the broken glass. And then he gets shot in the face with a BB gun at the beginning. That. And then same thing, paint can slips and falls on the micro machines and falls on the building.
And they both get shovels to the back of the head.
Blunt force trauma.
My favorite Home Alone gag still has to be from Home Alone 2 when he's throwing the bricks at him. He's like, I don't think it's got any more bricks.
Yeah, that was funny. What's next on your list, Randy?
Next, did you know that John Candy was only on set for one day?
No, I didn't know
Yeah, he wrapped all of his stuff for that, and apparently one day. Now, it says as a parenthetical after that that his stuff was shot in 23 hours of work, which for me, thinking of, you know, having actually worked on movies, no one works like 23 hours a day, so maybe he worked a grand total of 23, and it was a few days. I don't think he really just showed up on set for a day, but less than 24 hours worth of time on set, and he was in and out.
Got a half baggie of blow and 26 monsters. Let's shoot this.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, his only scenes are in the airport and then in the van.
Yeah, exactly. So it seems like it would be easy to shoot. And this isn't actually on the list, but it's a fun parenthetical. The entire movie was shot in and around Chicago.
Man, I love house. That house is gorgeous.
Yeah.
I think it's the same house in Planes, Trains as well.
It's where Michael Jordan hangs out there.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and skip down to that one on my list. Did you know the McAllister House is officially a tourist attraction? And it was like openly accepted to be by the owners of the house until 2012 when it sold for $1 million.
Yeah, and now the new owner's like, fuck you guys, get off my property.
Pretty much, yeah.
I remember it went on sale.
Get off my lawn, you damn kids! So being family-friendly was really apparently tough for Joe Pesci, which really shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. He has a really hard time containing his F-bombs. The director tried to fix this by suggesting he use the word fridge instead. Didn't always work out.
Here's yeah, that's my code for the F-word around my kids, too.
Fridge, really?
It's fridge.
That's awesome.
Nice. Me and Joe Pesci got something in common. I guess Christopher Columbus, not Joe Pesci.
No, Joe Pesci did some method acting on set. What he did to try to make Macaulay Culkin really afraid of his character is he avoided him on set. They didn't see each other when the cameras weren't rolling at all. That way, every time they had a scene together, Macaulay Culkin was kind of like seeing him, not for the first time, but he was still like this weird stranger, this really weird, intense, cursing a lot stranger. So, every time you saw that surprised reaction in young Kevin's face, it's probably fairly real. As any of us would probably emote the same way if we were being confronted by a really intense Joe Pesci. You know, here's something fun. Do you know who was offered the role of Harry first and turned it down? Harry being the leader of the two bungling bandits. Robert De Niro.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I can't imagine that at all. But the role was also offered to John Lovitz, and that I totally could picture. But I'm glad it didn't end up going to either of those two, because it really works the way it is now is the way it works best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern are a pretty amazing comedy team.
Yeah, and yeah. Who would have known, you know?
I don't think they get nearly the whenever they have like a list of like best on-screen duos, I think they're often overlooked. I think
for sure
they deserve a lot more credit.
You know what I think it is, though. I think a lot of people don't take pratfall slapstick kind of comedy seriously enough to even consider that. But I mean, I was the perfect target age when that movie came out. I was probably like 12, maybe 13, mm-hmm. And
that's just it, though. It's the greatest thing. Yeah, physical comedy is nuts, dude. Not everybody can do it.
Yeah,
I showed it to my kids, and they thought it was as funny last week as I thought it was in 1989.
And I agree. It transcends time. I just think that the people, the critics, who are more than likely the ones penning those lists.
Fuck those guys, Randy. Fuck them.
They're too highbrow for that.
Eat a butt.
Yeah, with Peter Jackson's big black arrows.
Something hard and sandpapery.
Batch. Yet.
All right. Did you know that Home Alone holds a Guinness record? Pulling in over $17 million on its opening weekend, it maintained the number one spot for a full 12 weeks and remained in the top 10 until June the following year. It became the highest grossing film of 1990 and earned a world record as such.
Wow. Well deserved. Yeah.
And this one is the last one for the list, and it kind of comes out of left field, but I love it. Home Alone is the Christmas movie of choice in Poland. At least 5 million views on national TV each year. It is the most watched show of the Christmas season.
It's like A Wonderful Life of Poland.
Exactly. And
I applaud those Poles.
Exactly. Well, they have good taste in comedy.
Absolutely. Yes.
So, hey, that's the list. Something fun, something holiday, since this is kind of officially our holiday episode, officially, unofficially. But, yeah.
Like it. Love the movie.
That is my gift to you guys and to our wonderful audience.
Appreciate it. Love it.
And go check out Home Alone. If you haven't seen it in a few years, do yourself a favor and go watch it.
Yeah.
You can maybe watch the second one, but avoid the third one.
I like the second one. I think the second one's fun.
The second one's okay.
It's reality.
The first one is what catches me in my nostalgia box.
Mm-hmm. I saw it twice in the theater, actually.
Just the second
YouTube,
one?
The first one.
YouTube, Home Alone 2, Bricks, and if you don't laugh, you're not a human being.
You know? Right, foul, get.
You are a right foul, get. Home Alone 4 is not very good either.
Well, what makes it, what makes it work? There's a 4?
Yeah.
I think it's a whole new bunch of bitches, though.
Yeah, 3 and 4 are
3
new.
Was, too, but...
Well, 3 is was released theatrically, and 4 was released just on ABC.
I have a game for us.
Oh, ooh, let's do it.
It's going to. I'm going to continue with my those pack of cards that I got with the movie trivia because it's easy. I don't have to work too hard. So put on your Tinseltown thinking caps.
Will there be a golden snitch?
Maybe. It depends how Randy's doing before the night's over. Are you guys ready? Just shout out the answer when you know it. We'll see how this goes.
All right.
If you guess wrong, of course your turn is forfeit. I will read 11 questions. 11, of course, being the golden snitch.
Loses the game gets marbles from Hungry Hunger Hippos shoved up your urethra.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then we'll have like a little baby shower game where you got to figure out how many marbles are in said urethra.
FYI, Malcolm McDowell's in Home Alone 5.
Oh my God, Dave. Quit it. Here we go. Question number one. This one's easy. Shame on you if you... lose this one. Who voiced Darth Vader?
James Earl Jones.
Ooh, I heard Dave first. Sorry, Randy. Applaud, Dave. Good job, Dave. I'm not just sorry for Randy.
Don't be overcompensating.
But I applaud you. All right, here we go. What 1978 sequel had the famous tagline, just when you thought it was safe,
just to
get back in the water?
I heard David first.
I heard Dave say Jaws first, but I heard you say Jaws 2 first. So we're going to call this one Randy gets that one.
I do love the Justin rules.
Well, I mean, you pause, Dave.
When you say your answer, it's like you're buzzing in.
Technically, you could have been wrong. Technically. Here we go. Number 3. What Hollywood actress's breakout role was in The Hunger Games?
Jennifer Lawrence.
Ooh, I heard Dave first. But good job, both of you. You're doing very well.
I mean, she was nominated for Academy Award in the movie before.
Right. Winter's Bone. That movie is so boring. Oh, my God. Have you seen my paw? Looking for my paw.
Snooze fest.
Oh, my God. So bad.
There's not a single bone to be had in that.
No.
It was big. Bunch of hillbillies on a mountain. Not good. Anyway. What actual cathedral in Paris did animators of the 1996 Disney movie visit, taking hundreds of pictures and doing hundreds of drawings for their technical accuracy?
What? Another movie.
Notre Dame?
I don't know the name of it. Oh, goddamn. Was it that
the
simple?
Cathedral?
Yes.
God damn it.
The whole time I'm like, it can't be that. It can't be that.
I know. I was thinking it's not that simple. There's a name for it. God. All right.
I've been there. It's gorgeous. Lovely.
I've seen the movie.
That's lovely, too.
I've neither seen the movie nor the actual
film. Oh, my God.
I actually really like that movie.
I do, too. Frollo's a beast.
He is. He's like one of my favorite Disney villains because he's all lustual.
Yes, he is a very lustual man. The fire, as he sings about. Anyway.
I just coined that phrase, by the way, lustual. I'm pretty sure it's not a real word.
That's a great word.
It's a Randyism.
Copyright Geek Legacy.
Yeah. There we go. Where are we at? Dave's at 3. Randy's at 1. Name the 4 ghosts from the old Pac-Man video game that make appearances in Wreck-It Ralph.
Inky, Blinky, something in Spot.
You're close. You got half right.
The other two are Pinky and Clyde.
You are 25. I guess you're half right too. But Randy's half is bigger. He got two names, you got one name.
Well, I remember one of them was ridiculous. Implied.
Well, yeah, there's Winky and Clyde.
Okay, so I got three, Randy got two.
Randy got two, you got one.
Well, I implied the other two, Inky and Blinky.
I said Inky Blinky, and I said Spot, and then you said something in Clyde.
Right, but he's saying that.
I was
technically he gets
Inky and Blinky.
Yeah, he's saying that he is at 75% while you're at 50%.
I was taking the two you got right and adding upon it.
Let me get a look at the judges. What are they saying?
I wonder what they're gonna say.
They're deliberating. Just one second. Ooh, they are saying that. What's that, Randy? Randy Van Dyke? Oh, okay, Randy gets the point. All right, there we go.
That's true. 50% is definitely higher than 75%.
Well, you are mooching. You are piggybacking off of his two.
Oh, I didn't know that was against the rules.
So,
it's my bad.
Yeah, so because he got two of those names, I'm going to go ahead and give him 2 points. That brings him to three. Dave, you will get 1 point, so you're at four.
You're still in the lead.
You're still in the lead. Commanding lead of 1 point. All right, next question. What Home Improvement teen star voiced the character of Simba?
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Ooh. Okay, I definitely heard myself there
yeah. first, but
I did hear Randy's voice first. You both said the right answer, but honestly, Dave, without no bullshit now, I heard Randy first. So it is now 4-4. This is amazing. This is close game. Okay, man, a lot of Pixar questions. In which Pixar movie does the villain have no dialogue at all? I would not know the answer.
There's so many Pixar movies without villains.
I didn't know the answer to this one. I had to cheat.
Trying to think.
It's more about the bear than the girl.
Brave?
Very good.
Oh, wow. I've never even seen that, so I do not know.
That's pretty good.
Well, Randy gets the point. I'm just kidding. Dave, you got the point. All right. It is five. David has five. Randy has four.
Oh, shit.
You didn't.
We're in like question like three.
I know. It's a very high scoring game.
7 questions have actually been asked.
It's 5-4.
Yeah. No one ever said to get 1 point a question.
That was my baseless assumption based on the fact that my right answers are always 1 point.
To quote fucking Two Jacks from episode one, you assume too much. That's Newt Gunray and motherfucking Amidala.
I just have the horrific luck of only always answering those 1 point questions.
Well, you know.
It's all about location, location, location.
You guys might know this. In what real-life museum does 2006 A Night at the Museum take place?
Smithsonian?
No.
No, it takes place at the Bronx Museum.
I have American Museum of Natural History in New York. Is that the same place?
It is.
Are you sure about that? Do I need to Google this? I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and say that you're correct.
Thanks.
But listeners can dispute that, and we might have to put an asterisk next to your win if you win this game.
Great. why don't we just mark me as wrong? Eliminate the asterisk.
No, because
this inspires interaction.
Yes. I'm all about fairness, Dave. I don't want to give you a win.
That is definitely the first thing that comes to my mind.
All right. Here we go. Yeah, fair. What was the name of Doc Brown's dog?
Einstein.
Einstein.
Copernicus.
In Back to the Future, 1985. Yes, you are correct with Einstein, Dave.
Yeah, I heard David first.
Very good, Dave. You're killing it. You have 7, Randy has 4.
But can Randy really have a non-prime number as his score? Shouldn't he really have 5?
3.
How about 11 if we're going primes?
Oh, shit.
6, out of a 10-question game.
8. 9. So that was question number 9. So question number 10. What does the name R2-D2 come from?
From American Graffiti. Reel 2, Day 2,
or something like that, or Dialogue 2.
Yeah, Reel 2, Dialogue Track 2. Yeah. That is correct.
I think we both got that one right in bits and pieces.
Yeah, so we'll give you both a point. So it's 8-5. Very good.
Our situation has not improved.
And what question did I say that was? Question 9 or did I say that was 10?
So that was 10.
Okay, that was 10.
All right, Golden Snitch.
Question number 11.
Isn't 11 usually the tiebreaker?
Usually the tiebreaker. But this is now the Golden Snitch for all the marbles.
It's worth 1,000 points for Randy.
This is all the marbles in your pee hole.
This one's actually kind of hard. I don't know if you guys will get this one.
Hard one, I think, is best for the Golden Snitch. It makes you feel like you really earned it.
I do enjoy your enormous confidence in us, Justin.
Well, I didn't know the answer to this one. I feel that the three of us are kind of on the same playing field. I mean, Dave, you're a little bit better than Randy and I, but maybe together we might be able to overcome you. But I don't know if you guys know the answer to this one.
We'll have to put that to the test one day.
Yeah. According to Happy in Snow White, why can't Dopey talk?
I feel like I should know this, having worked for Disney as long as I did.
You have 5 seconds. 4, 3.
He's never tired. Never tried.
1. Very good. Dave.
Was that it?
Dave is quickest with the Google machine.
Quickest with the Google.
That's right. I mispronounced it.
You never tried.
I'm not going to lie. That's why I said tired. I just read it real fast. I totally
agree. If I were to guess, I was going to say because he doesn't have anything to say.
Well, that's a good guess. That's a well-educated guess. In fact, I think that's such...
Your answer's not right, but damn, it doesn't sound like it should be.
Oh, man. Well, not cheating is always better. But
I concede defeat to David.
Randy already answered it wrong.
Yeah, that is true. Dave, you are quickest with the computer there, and you win. Congratulations. The correct answer was he never tried. What an underachiever.
Me or Dopey?
Pick one.
Pick one.
You're all
oh,
true.
Shit. That's funny. Yes, so that was our game. Congratulations. We will have one more game before the end of the new year, so keep that in mind.
Ooh.
We still have one more podcast before this year is finished.
I will run so Justin can play.
Cool. Does that mean we get to wrap up all this year and talk about what we're looking forward to next year?
Yes.
If only there were a movie coming out next year that I was excited for.
I know, it's really nothing.
No, instead, there's like 10 movies coming out next year. Oh my God. It's going to be, 2015 is going to be like the 80s returned.
It's going to be blockbuster apocalypse.
It's going to be another Hobbit movie there.
No.
No.
Final Hunger Games, Star Wars, Avengers, Jurassic World.
I don't even like that movie.
It's your attitude, man.
That's why. I don't even know his name. Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's why he killed himself. He hated the movie so much.
I'm sure that was probably the reason. Like, that's why he hooked up on the heroin.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got Age of Ultron. We got Star Wars. We got Jurassic World. We got Mad Max. Got Terminator. Got The Hunger Games. Got Kingsman. In-N-Out. Jupiter Ascending. Chappie.
Wait, you said Mad Max. That movie's... Isn't that going to bomb? Don't you think it's going to be a flop?
No way.
I think it's going to flop, dude.
I think it's going Fast to be 7? An action extravaganza that will surpass Fast 7.
No way! You're fucking crazy!
You heard it here first.
It will make $5.
It is gonna fucking die in one of those fires that's in that movie. It is so bad. I mean, I can't wait to see it. I'm excited to see it, but I just know that my money, my $8 and your $8 is gonna be all it makes.
You know, And this is just 100% my completely subjective opinion. I guarantee that I am going to enjoy it more than Furious 7.
Wow. That's
possible.
That might be true, yeah.
There's actually two movies I'm kind of interested to see how they do. The first one being Tomorrowland. I'm really excited for that one, the Brad Bird directed George Clooney film. And the other one, I'm curious to see how 50 Shades of Grey performs. I'm sure it'll make $1 trillion, but I want to see how it performs in the pantheon of other popular adult novels.
People are going to shit all over that movie.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there's going to be three of them. So, I mean, the first one's going to set the tone, and I'm curious. I'm very curious how the box office is going to respond to it.
Oh, my God. I think everybody that ever read the book is going to fucking hate it.
Yeah. Well, and it's definitely a female skewed film, you know. So I mean, it already ostracizes half the movie going audience. We should do a fun little bet about, you know, you think Mad Max is going to do good. You know, I'm sure one of us thinks Terminator do good. We should all pick
Star Wars is going to win.
We should pick blockbusters we think are going to fail, not the sheer things like Avengers and Star Wars.
Oh yeah,
and whoever's performs the best like wins something, like gets to control the other person's like Twitter account for a day or something.
Oh shit, that's a bad idea.
So movies that overall on the surface everyone thinks should fail, but we're going to pick to be our dark horse essentially.
Yeah, like Mad Max, like a Terminator.
Yeah.
Like a Jupiter's Ascending. I'm actually like one of the four assholes in the world excited for Jupiter's Ascending.
Right. I think it looks good, but they make long movies, man.
Yeah, and the a year delay never helps it. You got Ant-Man, San Andreas with The Rock, Mission Impossible 5, Hot Tub Time Machine 2. You seen the preview for that?
No. Sans John Cusack.
But with Adam Scott.
I like Adam Scott.
Yeah. I do. I like Adam Scott a lot. Ted 2 coming out.
I don't like Ted anything.
The Walk.
I'm sticking with Mad Max for mine.
That's a hit.
Here's Justin's pick, Seventh Son. That movie's actually going to come out, it says.
Oh, man, that movie's going to suck.
and yes, Justin, as my pick to we're supposed to pick like kind of what we think might do not do the best at the box office, or what might be kind of shitty films,
but be better than the other person's pick.
Right, right.
Okay, I'll take Terminator.
Got a Hateful Eight.
I think Tarantino movies do. I don't think that one counts because he never really has blockbusters. He just has really.
I'm still talking about 2015 movies. No, Hateful Eight will do well.
Isn't that supposed to be his last movie before he quote unquote retires?
No, he's got 10. He's got two more because he's kind of killed those one film. Said he wants to do 10, and he has two more after The Hateful Eight.
There you go. So I'll take I'll take Terminator, because I don't really know everything that's coming out.
All right, well, we'll have our picks by next week's podcast.
Okay, so I take that back. I don't pick Terminator. I'll pick it next week.
You can pick
on making my official pick, but yeah. I'm just letting you guys already know what my front runner is for now. But I'll take a week to think about it, or maybe 5 minutes before the show next week. I'll be reminded that we're doing this, and then I'll think about it then. But yeah, that'll give us a little time to come into it better prepared.
Well, you are not prepared.
Because then we're all going to pick big movies. We're going to pick, I'll pick Insurgent.
Which one's that?
That's fucking Divergent 2.
Oh, I don't like those.
Boring as shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope Tomorrowland does good. I hope that is a good movie.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for it. I know you posted the one on Geek Legacy, but seeing it in the theater was a little bit different than seeing it a little.
Where she picks up the button.
Yeah. She gets scared.
I like the trailer gets you interested without telling you a fucking thing. That's what a trailer should do. Not like Cinderella.
I want to see George Clooney riding around one of the cars in Autotopia.
Yeah. Put him on the fucking people mover and shit.
Yeah. Anyway, does anyone have any last minute shout-outs before we close this beast down?
Randy does.
We've already talked so much about it.
One more time. One more time! For those that weren't paying attention.
Yeah. I'd like to give another shout-out to the Maniacs on Movies podcast, of which I was a guest on this week talking about The Hobbit. A lot of fun, worth listening to. You get to listen to some very passionate guys talking about movies. I mean, sometimes even more passionate than us. Hard to believe.
What?
But they're out there. Check it out.
Now, why isn't Vaughn writing for our website, Just Randy?
That's right.
That's what I do with my kids. Am I Lou Zach?
You know what? I don't know, but I'm sure if we extended him the opportunity, he'd probably take us up on it.
Fix that. Make it happen.
There you go. Dave. Right. Dave, you got shout outs?
You know, this week I do. We're having a contest. Tyler, our managing editor for All Things Comics, he started something called Valiant Month. And we're actually going to be giving away the trade paperbacks of every Valiant book. It's like 9 books, and it's this amazing giveaway. And to enter, all you have to do is go to your social network of choice, preferably Twitter, and use the hashtag Valiant Month and Geek Legacy Rules. You can go to geeklegacy.com and find out all the rules. And yeah, it's pretty cool. So shout out to Tyler for putting it all together and being an all-around amazing dude. Not as amazing as Justin Randy, but that's a high bar.
Doyle rules.
Yeah, Doyle rule. Yeah, Doyle, your whole family's coming.
Well, very good. All of you, thank you for joining us for this, I guess it was our Christmas episode. I'm going to call it that because we call it Christmas over here. Like Kirk Cameron, we celebrate Christmas. Holy shit there. But happy holidays to those of you that don't. You know, that old chestnut. But thank you for joining us. We had a blast, as always. Amanda has been absent the last couple of weeks, and she feels bad about that. She will be part of the regular crew again next week for our final episode of the new year, so tune into that. We will be going over all of this year's hits and misses and what's coming out next year and what to look forward to, and I'm pretty excited about that. 2014 was an amazing year. It was a stellar year, and I am looking forward to 2015. Remember to visit geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. Check out the other podcasts that we have on the Geek Legacy Network. Of course, there is the Pixelated Podcast with Stephen James and myself, where we review a week's worth of video game news all in one nice little hour. And also the Comic Corner Podcast, which is hosted by Jeff and Tyler, where they review comics currently on the pull list, have some fun interviews, and some interesting rants. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Geek Legacy, and you have a happy holidays, and we will see you next week. Thank you.